You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
What time is it?
Now I'm all screwed up, dude.
See?
It's like time's reversed.
It's a time warp.
Elvis at 6, Ozzy at 7. What the heck's going on in this world?
I don't know. It must be whatever you have, like a cold or something, and it's affecting your brain, I think, today. So,
if you're just tuning in and you hear me sounding like Deborah Winger, it's because I know the windows were open a little last night.
Yeah.
And I think whatever I woke up with, my throat just trashed. So this is what you get today instead of my usual dulcetones. You got this guy. So I'll keep staying as fiery as humanly possible.
Do it.
Allie Miller's coming up in the third hour. She'll get you fired up about what's going on with Pima County roads budgets. We'll just reflect together, and hopefully Mark Evans gets everything down on his tape recorder. Ed, let's go right to the phones, to the Ed Alexander. I don't know. There's all these bullcrap with the hotline,
it
the newsmaker
is.
Line.
It is.
One of those things. Let's go to Phil Kirpin from President. He's the president of American Commitment. Phil, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. Great to be with you.
Tell us what an American commitment is first.
Hello.
Hello.
Is my can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Can you not hear us?
We have a different.
I don't know. Your special sponsored hotline might have had a little glitch there, but I hear you now.
All right. Tell us. Let's start from me. And Phil, welcome to the show. Tell us what American Commitment is.
We're a national free market advocacy group. We work on all of the fiscal, economic, and regulatory issues. And what we do, it's a little bit different from some of the other groups, is we're not doing original research and 20-page papers, stuff like that. Everything is short, direct, and to the point. We try to focus on the issues that are on the margin that could go either way in Washington, and get people the facts and the information to be more engaged citizens, so we might tip more of these fights that are on the margin in a more free market direction. And all our stuff is on the website, AmericanCommitment.org.
So I guess the question is, what did you see in the world of think tanks and advocacy groups? Is the niche of American Commitment that you're providing things in a more digestible form? I mean, that's my question.
Two things. One is that the form is more digestible, so it's a lot of 200-word action alert emails, 600-word columns, 1-minute explanatory videos. So it's more digestible, more accessible than, you know, a lot of the longer research products that are out there. But the other thing is, you know, a lot of groups will, like, focus on one area of policy, and they'll be, like, the education policy place, or they'll be, like, you know, the immigration policy, whatever it is, and they'll just do that in huge depth all the time. And then, you know, when their issue gets hot, they become important for a little while, but then they sort of recede into the background. We sort of do the opposite of that. We try to jump into whatever the biggest thing going is at any given point in time, what the big fight is that could go either way, that's really kind of the big open question in Washington, and we try to jump right into that and make a difference in a more free market direction.
Well, we know with impeachment inquiries, nothing really is getting done in D.C. right now. So,
well, not in Congress.
Right.
There's a lot of fights happening in the agencies, of course. You know, it's not always the worst thing, by the way.
I agree.
Is gridlocked. That's actually kind of good because most of what they do is usually bad. So.
And
congressional gridlock when you have a crazy left-wing administration like Obama's kind of bad because they're, you know, pushing the envelope and expanding government power everywhere. Congressional gridlock when you have a Trump administration that is basically trying to diminish the power of the federal government across all the agencies, that's generally a pretty good thing, actually. So
sure.
I don't mind the gridlock too much, although, you know,
What's the perfect scenario?
Well, you know, historically, when we really seem to do well fiscally is when we have a Democratic president and a Republican Congress, and they sort of gridlock that way. That tends to limit spending. The problem is that in recent years, so much of the power has sort of moved into the agencies, and so much of the policymaking has become executive branch. That arrangement is problematic, even if spending's limited, as it was, you know, really for the last 6 years of Obama after Republicans took the House. You still had massive expansion of government and abuses of power through the regulatory process. So the sort of the conventional wisdom that Republican Congress, Democrat presidency is sound fiscally, I'm not sure that works anymore unless we can really limit regulatory and administrative power structurally, which we haven't done a great job of doing. So, you know, I think that you know, given that reality, you probably want a Republican president and a Democratic Congress. What we have right now is probably a pretty good recipe to get good economic outcomes. And we have had very good economic outcomes for the most part. You know, we have very good tax policy. We have very good regulatory policy right now. The trade policy has been sort of the big wild card, the big question mark, although it looks like it's improving with this tentative deal with China. And if that happens, we're really going to be off to the races, I think, economically and in the financial markets, which will really help the president. And I think that's part of why the whole impeachment thing has taken off, is I think there's a real panic among the Democrats and the elite media and the establishment that if the China trade situation is resolved favorably, there's just going to be this huge economic wind at the president's back for reelection. And so they want to talk about anything but substantive policy. They want it to be, you know, all about the drama of, you know, all these various characters we're meeting in this impeachment thing. You know, the Vindman and Taylor and Volcker and all the, you know, all these names, and they're trying to dramatize it and make it like a soap opera, even though that has basically no relevance to anyone's life who's actually going to be voting. You know, that's what they want it to be about.
And being a border state, of course, we've heard from all elected officials and non-elected officials how important our trade is with Mexico, which it is. And, of course, we have this USMCA sitting out there. But, you know, God forbid anyone in the House wants to do anything with this and give Trump a perception of a victory.
Yeah. Well, that's a tricky one right now because, you know, the president could force a vote on it in the House under the fast-track law if he wanted to. He could send them the official notice and force a vote. But, you know, they do the vote counting, and they realize that if Nancy Pelosi tells them to vote no, they're going to vote no. And so they've been trying to negotiate this deal with Pelosi to, you know, give her some changes and get it through. And, you know, the thing she's asking for, though, are really kind of unreasonable. I mean, she sort of deputized Richard Trumka, the head of the AFL-CIO, to negotiate with the White House, and he wants a union pension bailout added to the USMCA. Now, what does that have anything to do with our trade with Canada? I mean, it's like the most ridiculous. You know, what kind of ridiculous ask is that, other than, you know, I'm in the room, so I'm going to ask for the moon, the stars, and the sky? And so he wants the union pensions bailed out. They want to actually roll back a significant provision that we got that would make Canada and Mexico pay more for our biopharmaceuticals, which would be a positive because if they paid more, they'd cover more of the R&D costs. We'd pay less and we'd get more drugs. That's like a huge win in this thing. They want that rolled back. I find that very strange. And so, you know, they're making these very strange sort of unreasonable asks. And at some point, you have to wonder if Pelosi just doesn't want to get to yes. She doesn't want to get a deal. She would rather the president not get that victory. And, you know, I would hope that if Pelosi doesn't come around soon, they will really put all the pressure and all the screws on enough Democrats to try to pick them off and just force the vote kind of over her head and try to squeak it through. But it's tough. She's a very good vote counter. And that's why she's sort of empowered in this negotiation right now. And Democrats really should be ashamed because right now the Democrats are the party of NAFTA without revision, without improvement, without modernization, because they are blocking efforts to move the USMCA. And, you know, it's pretty weird for a party that's been bashing NAFTA election after election after election. They've now set themselves up to be the party of keeping it with no changes at all.
We do weekly visits with Congressman Schweikert, and he's on Ways and Means, and he's like, look, we have Democrats that have helped forge this document that can't vote for it because they'll get obliterated.
It's a very strange situation. I mean, I don't think they have real substantive objections.
No.
It's really just they don't want the president to get a win. And so they don't want the country to get a win because they don't want the president to get a win.
So remember, the Democrat thing is Trump hates Mexicans, right? So the worst thing they want, the nightmare thing, is there's like the triple handshake with AMLO, Trudeau, and Trump celebrating USMCA in an election year. That's a Pelosi nightmare.
Yeah, well,
just on pure appearance.
Their public statements, they keep saying, oh, yeah, no, we want to have a deal. Impeachment doesn't prevent that. We're still negotiating in good faith. It's a very bizarre situation. But
Phil, I know you wanted to talk Federal Reserve, and I abused your first segment not talking about Federal Reserve. Could you hold on for our segment, and we come back after some commercials?
Happy to. Sure.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Phil Kirpin, check out AmericanCommitment.org. And we're going to come back and talk Federal Reserve, a mysterious entity that most people said, oh, I know what that is, but what do they really do? We'll talk about that. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, Allie Miller in the third hour. 7:21 in the morning. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson. 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. If you have a question for Phil Turpin of AmericanCommitment.org, give us a call, 790-2040. Phil, welcome back to the show. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. Tell me about why the Federal Reserve is on the radar of American Commitment current. Well, there's lots of reasons, but I'm just going to ask the classic interview question.
There's several reasons. You know, probably the most significant one is that they're still stuck on five members. They've had two vacancies for like 3 years now, and the president's named six people to them, and they've all sort of failed to move in Senate, which is kind of crazy because the first few Trump appointees ended up not being very Trumpy at all. And so you've got this Federal Reserve now that the president is sort of feuding with, fighting with openly over a variety of issues, most significantly interest rate and balance sheet issues. And you've got these two vacancies, and he can't seem to get them filled. He can't see, you know, he had two nominees that died last Congress. He had two nominees that died earlier this year. And he named two people in July that haven't even had hearings. He could go 0-for-6 on filling these two seats, which is a pretty interesting example of kind of permanent Washington establishment resistance.
Phil, what party still has more votes in the Senate?
Yeah, we have 53 Republican senators. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird, right? We have 53 Republican senators, and the president, the last six people he's named to the Federal Reserve haven't even had votes in the Senate. How does that work?
One of my unfavorite senators, the turtle, Mitch McConnell, what's his excuse?
Yeah, I don't know. I asked his staff for an update. They didn't get back to me. I asked them what's going on with these Fed nominees. They didn't get back to me. So I don't know. But this might be on the White House, to be honest, because these latest two that he named in July, I don't know if he's actually formally sent them up yet. I don't think he has. So the personnel process in the White House or the Senate, or they can't get on the same page. I don't know exactly why. But the Fed's been operating with five governors instead of seven for a long time, and that has an impact on policy issues, sometimes in a very negative way. So, you know, we've been tracking this issue of real-time payments, which is a very important issue. This is the idea that when someone sends you money electronically, it should arrive and be available immediately when it's sent, instead of having to wait a couple days for it to clear, and sometimes even a couple more days after that for funds availability. And, you know, this is it's a big inconvenience for individuals, but it's also a big source of friction in the economy, because you've got a lot of small businesses where if they get a big payment to conclude a job, they really can't turn around and go to the next job until those funds clear, because they've got to be able to get equipment, they've got to make outlays on the other end to start up a job. And so you sometimes have resources that are idle for days or even a week while a big payment waits to clear. That's a major source of friction that costs the economy, you know, billions of dollars. And so if we could fix this, if we could have payments arrive as soon as they're sent, that would be a huge economic benefit. And they have this in Europe, so we've sort of fallen behind in this. But it's not an easy thing to do, because you need to have a lot of sort of authentication and verification and fraud protection built into a transaction if as soon as it goes, the money's gone, and you don't have that ability to cancel it or call it back. And so it takes sophistication to build a system that can do that. And so the Federal Reserve studied this a couple of years ago. They had a task force, and basically they recommended to the private banks, develop a real-time payment system, do this, it's important. And they basically gave them their marching orders, go build this. And the banks formed a consortium called TCH, the Clearinghouse. They spent over $1 billion developing a real-time payment system. It's connected to about 60% of deposit accounts in the United States now. So if you're trying to send money to and from banks that are connected to it, you can get real-time payments already, but it's not universal. But then the Fed switched. They did an about-face a couple of months ago. They said, you know what, we're going to build our own real-time payment system in competition with the private sector one we asked the banks to build and that we regulate and oversee. We're going to become a competitor to the system that we regulate and that we asked for, and it's going to take us 5 years to build it. Well, a lot of the smaller banks are saying, hey, we'd rather be in the Fed system. Maybe it'll be priced better for us than the one that the big banks built. So we'll wait the 5 years for the Fed system to be up and running. And in the meantime, you've got the same problem that we've had. We're going to have for the next 5 years, because smaller banks are not going to be connected to real-time payments for the most part. Some will, but a lot of them won't, because they're going to be waiting for this Fed system. So this Fed about-face is actually going to significantly slow the availability of real-time payments. So you're going to have this ridiculous situation where the Fed is a competitor competing with the banks that it regulates, which is not something we should have. And so this is an example, though, of the problem with those vacancies on the board, because this passed on a 4-1 vote. Randall Quarles was the only dissenter, and you know there were a lot of indicators that Chairman Jay Powell was against this, but I think the chairman would have been embarrassed to lose a 3-2 vote. It was Obama appointees, Lael Brainard in particular, that were spearheading this, and I think he voted for it because he'd rather be on the winning end of a 4-1 vote than the losing end of a 3-2 vote. But if we had had two more strong Trump nominees there, this probably could have been defeated.
So before we only got a couple minutes left together, give me the short, punchy Phil blueprint to fix the Fed in 2 minutes. What needs to happen?
Well, the near-term low-hurdle goal would be to get those seats filled, and I think the people that Trump had named over the summer, Judy Shelton and Chris Waller, would be a significant improvement from the people we have now. But I think kind of long-term, I support the Steve Moore vision, which is why I was so disappointed when his nomination collapsed. And I really think they need to adopt a commodity price rule, and they should be focused solely on price stability based on a commodity price rule rather than doing interest rate targeting, which really doesn't have a very good track record. And I think that the dual mandate, the idea that they're in charge of employment in the economy, is a source of enormous confusion. So I would say a commodity price rule, forward-looking, inflation-minimizing, rule-based monetary policy would be the most important thing. And of course, on the regulatory side, I'd like to see them be a lot more humble and a lot less interventionist and a lot more market oriented. And that also, I think, could benefit from the nominees that the president named moving forward.
Phil, thanks for the knowledge today, and keep in touch. Let's keep this as a regular kind of discussion. Okay.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
Good talking to you, sir. Phil Kirpin. He's the president of American Commitment. Check him out at americancommitment.org. CBS Bloomberg coming up next. And then we're going to do Allie's here at 8, but we're going to, over the next two segments, we're going to fly around at high speed in the old Pueblo.
Cool.
Should
I get the chopper out?
Get the Freedom One. We're going into flyover country at Wake Up Tucson. Ooh. All right, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. We're doing a little Sammy VH today. I don't know why it's in my playlist, but it is. That's life. 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Getting my herbal brewed here.
Take a break, sir.
Letting Depeche Mode kick in a little bit here.
Your voice is doing well so far after halfway through.
I found the Cepacol lozenges.
Yeah.
Those are amazing.
They work, but all they do is like they make you numb, and so you don't know how bad it really hurts.
So it doesn't hurt that bad, but
they're good to get rid of the hurt.
A little froggy. Here at the Wake Up Tucson. Now, something that totally made my laugh my tail off during the news.
Oh, yeah, CBS News?
Yeah.
First of all, they had to talk to Nancy on the steps.
No, this is the Nancy line that just got me going.
Yeah. Okay. The defenders? Go ahead.
We're the defenders of democracy.
Where were you when the Obama administration unleashed the IRS on Republicans? Where were you when they tapped into the AP reporter's emails because you were writing stuff the Obama administration didn't like?
Mm. We're the defenders of democracy.
If you're going to say something big and ballsy as the defenders of democracy, you better walk the walk because that one falls flat.
And they're all there with their microphones right in their face. Tell us more, Nance. Tell us more.
That's like, in the old days when Wilt Chamberlain was alive, him being a model for celibacy. Now, rest in peace, Wilt. We got to whip around this town right now. Ed, get the helicopter.
Let's go.
We got to go because I got Allie Miller at the top of the
hour. Out of here, man.
So we got to get moving and grooving. Let's wheel up to the state of Arizona real quick, up to Phoenix. Yeah, you just leave it on the whole time. Right. It's just fine.
Okay.
I mean, don't leave it on. I'm glad we're in the copter here. It's great.
In the chopper.
This is your Red for Ed moment here. We have Associated Press, state investigators seeing more teacher misconduct claims. The investigative unit at the Arizona Department of Education has handled an increase in sexual or other misconduct claims against teachers. The ideal caseload usually is about 50 per investigator, and they have four, right? Currently, each of those investigators are handling 150 claims of sexual misconduct and other misconduct.
Ooh.
And the way the law works, there's different rules for certified teachers, and then but not the 6,000 non-certified school employees, such as bus drivers, classroom aides. So now they got, that's a piece of legislation that doesn't exist, supposedly. So we got to go do that. So we'll see if the Red for Red people come out and say, hey, this is a problem that we got 600 current cases of sexual misconduct claims. Now we're going to whip over to the foothills of the upper foothills. We're just near Brood, Sabino Canyon. We have this thing called, I don't know, what marketing company was working with these people? The Sabino Canyon Crawler.
The Crawler. That's a magical word, isn't it?
I don't know. It's a guy who's the marketing guy. If you were sitting around the room and say, hey, what do you want to call the shuttle, right? And Jim in the back went, hey, how about the crawler? I'll put that on a back burner.
Wow.
What else you got?
No, like, wow, that's a great idea.
So remember, this is your government and the electric company outbidding a private person.
That 19-story electric company downtown.
Remember, there's this thing. It's owned by something called the Regional Partnering Center. Okay? It owns the Sabino Canyon Trolley. And there was, now, don't get me wrong. The previous guy who ran it for years was not doing a great job.
Right.
Right? He had the gas, you know, those gas trams were just getting...
Hadn't done much.
Right?
Update of anything.
I mean, one of his dumbest mistakes... we don't take credit cards.
Right.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop. Get into the 20th century, let alone the 21st century, pal. So he left his flank wide open for this all to happen. And all the powers that be that were in on this one. They wanted it, him gone. There was some sort of procurement process, but what's interesting is this regional partnering center is the PAG RTA guys with TEP. Are the partners in a regional, they're a non-profit that somehow outbidded the, and I'm sure they should, right? They're government entity with the electric company outbidding any other private people that went in there. And then they have Total Transit, I think, is the company that does transit stuff all over the country, running the actual shuttle. So what I'm saying here is usually the government is not allowed to compete against the private sector. There's like laws and crap against that.
Right. Yeah. Called laws. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how any of that happened. Now, the funny thing is I'm looking at the ribbon cutting. Okay. And we got Ann Kirkpatrick.
Baby.
Who spent more time there than she did doing the flyby through the World War II veterans last Thursday.
The veterans thing, I guess.
Taking her picture with Farhad from RTA PAG, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Hutch Hutchins from TEP. And Martha McSally. Because Martha's given herself the pat on the back. I really wanted to get this done for the people, blah, blah, blah. Some people would say, you kind of beat out private businesses with a partnership of governments. So then you look, I went to the RPC, just so you know.
There's somebody else in that picture.
Who was the other person?
That big guy? Raul.
Oh, and Raul, that's right.
Raul has the shovel.
That's right, Raul. You are correct. Correct.
The scissors.
So this
of course he's there.
So this is, again, I don't know what the other options were in this, but this is the government outbidding a private people for a government contract. So I looked at the Regional Partnering Center people, just so you know who's on the board of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Farhad. I think Farhad's on that. The guy who's the bean counter at PAG RTA, whatever his name is. Two folks, one from the Pasquayaki, one from the Tohono O'odham, right? Someone from Joe Smith or somebody, I don't know if that's a girl or a guy, from TEP. And Satish Hiremath.
What?
So Satish is on there because when they originally formed it, he was still probably the PAG chairman and Oro Valley mayor, But now the Oro Valley, he's no longer Oro Valley mayor. He should probably be off of that. The only reason he got there in the first place is for a while there, people elected him to be the mayor. So anyway, that's the real story behind Sabino Canyon. I'm not saying there's anything nefarious here or something like that. I don't know if anyone else bidded for it. Mm-hmm. But that's something, you know.
So is it all electric now?
Yes.
Because they just bought those new ones.
Because what happened was TEP staked this out with $1.5 to $2 million of your ratepayer dollars to front this thing in the beginning and then put the equipment in. I'm just telling you, that's the story behind it. The Regional Partnering Center, which it's so funny when you see the reporting on it, no one ever says who it is. It's just like this entity. Oh, the Regional Partnering Center. Well, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's PAG RTA, right, which are made up of your government entities, with Tucson Electric Power, is now the vendor for the Forest Service. That's what you're talking about. Just wanted to let you know. There's DeSimone bumming us out again about... real quick, listener Joe, left turn crashes.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those working guys who's listening to us while he's doing his job. I drive auto parts for a dealership and travel all over the city. It is nuts.
There you go.
Out there, people run the left turn when it has turned red. Before leaving any stop, you have to make sure there is not a vehicle coming through.
You must look both ways and then go. You must look both ways anymore.
True.
They're running red lights like crazy.
What else do we got to whip around to? We already talked about glow. Oh, let's talk about, well, we know we have a street sign that no one knows how to do.
What is that all about? Who cares? Why is that such big news?
Well, because it's a typo on a street sign, so for some reason.
So this is a border town, that's news.
Let's go over to 1010 on 1010 East 10th.
Yep.
For the TUSD. This guy, Bruce Burke, is the guy Dusty Williams appointed to replace Stegman.
Yeah.
He was on the board before, and again, I keep talking to different folks. Basically, seems like he's like a nice guy. He's not like nasty or something, but really, he's going to become a Adelita Crystal Foster convenient third vote.
Right.
So
that's what they need Jordy.
Let's see what he does over. Keep the kids at TUSD who are still there on the prayer list. That's all I can tell you, because Bruce, again, it's tough. It's tough at Alexander.
You know?
It's tough out there. It just happens. It happens. What's the other one I want to get to real quick before we run out of time? Well, it's 7:45. Let's go to break. And then there's a couple more I got to get to while we whip around on Freedom One.
I'll bring Freedom home for a minute, and then you let me know where we're going next, okay?
I think we're going to go... We're going to go to Northwestern University. We're taking the Pliskin Acres chopper out there.
Wow.
So, wake up, Tucson. 10:30, The Voice. Ed and Chris, wake up.
In Freedom One.
Listener Martin said, are you bummed out that the Gray Line didn't get the shuttle service? They never bidded on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy bid, especially because you got to buy those shuttles.
Yeah.
Electric shuttles are way expensive.
Right.
So, that's why they needed that TEP front money. To make this happen.
Why does TEP have so much money?
They have a monopoly, Ed.
Oh, and they keep raising my rates?
Did you figure that out?
And they keep raising my rates whenever they want to.
Did you figure that one out yet? There's a monopoly. Real quick, got to go up to, this is from the Washington Post, believe it or not. Oh, sorry. Democracy dies in the darkness. And this is actually a true democracy. This is not even one of their fake democracy dies in the darkness ones. So Jeff Sessions, who's the former senator and attorney general when Trump first started, he was visiting, doing a speech at Northwestern University. Okay. On Sunday, Northwestern University student newspaper had to publish an editorial apologizing for mistakes the staff made when covering the protest during Jeff Sessions' visit to campus on November 5th. The errors that the paper was apologizing for, you got to listen to this. It's magical. Tweeting out photos of students protesting Sessions, then using the campus directory to make a call to those demonstrators for interviews. So think about this one more time. The Northwestern University newspaper apologize for tweeting out photos of students at the Jeff Sessions speech protesting. Then they called them up using the campus directory for interviews. This is the apologies. This is why they had to, quote, make apologies. So you got to listen to this. This apology from the editorial board is magic. You got to listen to this, Ed, because you're going to get so triggered.
No, I'm listening.
Quote, we recognize that we contributed to the harm students experienced and wanted to apologize for and address the mistakes that we made that night, the editorial board wrote. Quote, some protesters found photos posted to reporter Twitter accounts not just traumatizing, this is the word, re-traumatizing.
Oh.
And invasive. The photos have since been taken down. Then they started getting pounded by professional journalists saying that the apology itself was the only mistake.
Right.
And the error compounded by the fact that the college is home to the celebrated Medill School of Journalism.
Head up.
Quote, there's a lot to comment on this. This is from Chicago Trib reporter Greg Pratt. There's a lot to comment on this editorial, but apologizing for contacting people to ask if they're willing to be interviewed, regretting that you photographed protesters protesting in public.
It's news. You're allowed to take pictures in news. That's what you do. And there's a little blob on the line. Then there's a story under it. Isn't that how it works?
I'm just telling you.
Where's Northwest University?
This is in Chicago.
Well, Obama land.
Quote, something we thought about a lot this week is how challenging, this is from the editor-in-chief.
Yeah, after he got
about how challenging whipped. It is to be student journalists who are reporting about other students. What?
That's what you do.
Quote, we're thinking about what our role looks like specifically as student journalists who have to cover this, but at the same time, we have to go to class with those students tomorrow. I'm telling you, man.
Stop it.
This is magical.
No safe spaces. The Prager movies is still here, hopefully.
It is. It's at Elkhorn locations. Mall, Foothills Mall, and up at the Oral Valley Marketplace if you'd like to check it out. Now, let's get to San Francisco, my city by the bay. So, this guy's name is Chaza Boudin, B-O-U-D-I-N, like Boudin sausage. He is the incoming district attorney for the urine and feces plagued.
Oh, stop it.
It's true.
Oh, it's San Francisco, of course. Okay.
Thank you. This is from the Daily Caller. He pledged during the campaign not to prosecute public urination and other quality of life crimes if he was elected.
So it's okay. It's okay to defecate anywhere in San Francisco.
We will not prosecute cases involving quality of life crimes.
This is how
crimes
it has deteriorated.
Crimes such as public camping. That's okay.
We're not going to.
Okay.
Sounds like Tucson.
Then we have, what else do we got here?
Like Wahina land.
I feel like we should be playing Lynyrd Skynyrd, That Smell. So crimes such as public camping, right? Offering or soliciting sex.
That's okay. We won't be cutting down on that. We'll be knocking down.
Public urination.
Mm-hmm. Begging's got to be in there somewhere.
Blocking a sidewalk should not and will not be prosecuted, said Mr. Boudin. Vowed in a response to the ACLU questionnaire during the campaign. Many of these crimes are still being prosecuted. We have a long way to go to decriminalize poverty and homelessness. Boudin's parents were members of the Weather Underground domestic terrorist group.
There you go, baby.
He was raised in Chicago by Weather Underground leaders Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn after his parents were sent to prison on murder charges while he was a toddler.
Listen to this.
Democrat presidential candidate Bernie Sanders cheered Boudin's victory I'm going to talk, and I got to do my Bernie voice with the Chris voice. Come on, D-Swan, you can do it. Now's the moment to fundamentally transform our racist and broken criminal justice system by ending mass incarceration, the failed war on drugs, and the criminalization of poverty. Congratulating Boudin on his historic victory. Wow. It hurts to do Bernie like that.
You did good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm looking at the Daily Wildcat, today's edition.
What do we got today?
Can I say that? So here's your headline by Ella McCarville.
Sure.
Slut Walk supports transgender women of color. And then there's the picture.
All right, let's scroll down. Let's find out more about Slut Walk.
Aims to reclaim and redefine what being a slut means and put an end to the victim blaming in cases of sexual assault in the Southwest. Reclaiming the term in honor of transgender women and women of color is of major importance.
Now,
so they can do that, but the other people who took a picture and reported of other people who were protesting, you couldn't.
Now, I guess you guys are going to have to help me out, 790-2040 or the various channels. Go back to that first sentence real quick. I'm really trying to understand here. Reclaiming the term slut in honor of transgendered women and women of color is a major importance. So when I hear reclaiming, does that mean the word slut at one time in history was like a good thing?
No.
I don't, again, I'm
playing. Okay, Slut Walk protests the blaming of the victim
right.
that occurs when sexual assault survivors are criticized for their clothing and sexual history.
No, I understand the idea of trying to protest the blaming of the victim.
I'm there.
Ed and I are 100% support of protesting the blaming of the victim based on clothing or the sexual history with this woman's right. The part I don't get is, I understand they use the word slut because they're trying to get your attention.
Sure, it's a.
But I guess when I hear the word, we're going to reclaim the word slut. How about we just eliminate the word slut? Would that be better? You know, there's certain words that we used to use to describe people in this world that are no longer good, and in most cases, correct that we got rid of them. I don't understand reclaiming the word slut. I guess I'm too old-fashioned in my late 40s. That's my problem. I'm too much of an old fart in my late 40s. That happens. 7:58.
Mama would have said, don't call somebody that.
Right. Right. Now, the best part is when the city of Tucson stops, back to the San Francisco guy. Wait till the city of Tucson says they're going to, I mean, we don't have enough cops. Wait till Rankin or somebody says, we're not going to be prosecuting any of these crimes anymore.
It's coming. Right in the world. Sanctuary City underground.
Do you think our soon to be new councilwoman Lane Santa Cruz would love to decriminalize everything that Mr. Boudin wants to do in San Francisco? Probably.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So Mark Evans, I know you're in your Yoda pajamas. You're eating your Fruit Loops mixed with your Dinky Donuts or whatever you're eating right now. You probably in about 8 minutes, Mark. You got to hit he has that old fashioned reel to reel. Mark's really old school to record.
Those are good ones.
Allie
they
Miller.
Work forever.
I know. Yeah. So he's going to record Allie and I coming up next. Lots of stuff to cover with Supervisor Miller. Warm up your phone. I'm going to make her talk a lot with the way my voice is going. 790-2040. Wake up.